Want affordable, abundant internet access? First, you need competition. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. All this week on Marketplace Tech, we have a new series called The Internet is Everything, looking at access, cost, infrastructure, and today, competition. Okay, actually, the almost complete lack of competition. According to a 2017 study from the nonprofit Institute for Local Self-Reliance, more than 129 million people in the U.S. have only one option for broadband. So is that a government problem or a free market problem? Susan Crawford is a law professor at Harvard and author of the book Fiber, The Coming Tech Revolution and Why America Might Miss It.
Without oversight or competition, we've allowed a handful of players to really control our internet access destiny. And it's particularly cruel right now. About 18% of African-American households in America don't have a connection at home. And many times that's because of cost. There may be that cable provider there, but they're a local monopoly and they can charge whatever they like.
There's been a lot of conversation about classifying internet as a utility, but would a legal classification ameliorate some of these problems?
It would certainly be a step. Look, when you go get a driver's license, you can bring your cable bill as evidence of your address. It feels like a utility to Americans, and they don't want to give it up. They'll pay for it often before they'll pay for food if they're running out of money. Legal classification would be a first step towards ensuring that these networks are forced to compete, but it would run headlong into an awful lot of litigation. And I've actually pushed in my career for just avoiding these guys and building around them. Just make sure that there's a publicly owned basic facility like the open road across which many competitors can travel, and that that basic facility is available at low prices to many members of the private market who want to compete in providing internet access to all of us. That's how we'd get to lower prices.
Are you talking about then a publicly funded new infrastructure?
Yeah, I'm talking about the same kind of thing we did for electricity in the 30s, which is to ensure that people all over the country have a connection to their home at a basic level of efficacy. And then to ensure that that basic infrastructure is available for lease to private providers so that everybody can get a cheap connection from a private provider.
Do you feel like people understand that that's not what we have? Because a lot of the existing infrastructure was subsidized originally.
Hugely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right, Molly. The federal government set up rules giving access to things like poles and conduit and ducts across the country. And that access to those rights of way made these existing networks possible. We then very much let go of oversight, especially in urban areas, with the result that we've got extraordinarily expensive access, usually provided by a single provider, subject to very little competition. Comcast and Charter's only head-to-head competition would come from fiber to the home as a provider. And they face that competition in only about a third of their footprints. So their room to grow by just charging people for their service is very great all over America, particularly in urban areas.
I mean, we do have, you know, over the past year, SpaceX has launched hundreds, maybe thousands of satellites in an attempt to provide internet service. We've seen Google sort of start and stop. Is there a possibility of new entrants to the market improving the competitive landscape?
The only way to disrupt this marketplace is to make basic infrastructure available that anybody could rent to compete with them. Right now, we've got the worst of both worlds. We've got no federal infrastructure, no federal oversight, and no competition. We're leaving lots of Americans out. And particularly when we know we need internet access in order to educate our children and get access to health services, the cruelty of this situation is really appalling.
Do you think that this pandemic and the kind of exposure of how necessary, how essential the internet is to, like you said, work, education, functioning in today's society, will that change the tenor of any of these conversations, do you think?
Look, human beings by their nature are cheerful and resilient, and I'm one of them. I have to be optimistic that we will figure this out. I mean, we put a man on the moon. We built the Hoover Dam. We're capable of great things. We can remember that again. We can take seriously our obligation to provide everybody with a decent life and opportunity, and have the bravery to take on the incumbents. FDR's chief opponent in the 1932 election was the private electricity industry that didn't want to be disrupted, really loved the status quo, and didn't want to see any kind of regulatory oversight. He battled that industry, and as a result, we have relatively inexpensive electricity across America reaching everyone. There must be a candidate out there somewhere who understands the importance of internet access to the future of the country.
I mean, these conversations, and in some cases, these buildouts are happening here and there in municipalities. Does it have to be a federal effort, though?
Ultimately, the federal government has to be involved. But you're right. There are more than 800 cities across America who have decided they are sick of not having their destinies in their own hands and have taken steps towards providing people with very high speed, very cheap access. That's been a crucial development, but it's just a patchwork, and we'll need to take much bigger steps in order to make sure this reaches everyone.
Where do you see the conversation about 5G fitting in here? I mean, for just a nanosecond there, the Trump administration seemed to be having conversations about trying to, you know, at least a little bit, nationalize that infrastructure.
It's totally complementary. Without fiber everywhere, we can't have 5G. Saying we could have 5G without fiber is like saying, oh, we've got airplanes. Who needs airports? That signal has to go somewhere, and only fiber can carry the tsunami of data it's going to create. So the idea of having competitive 5G providers everywhere will carry with it the necessity of having cheap, competitive fiber available everywhere as well.
Susan Crawford is a law professor at Harvard. And now for some related audio. Today we hear from Jennifer Bridgens. She lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Her passion is organizing information and helping people figure out how to search for things, both online and in the real world. She was working as a business analyst for the state of Pennsylvania, but she was let go at the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak. So now she's unemployed and has been relying on the internet to search for jobs and get crucial services.
Everything seems okay. Was okay until like mid-April. I would notice that there were certain times of day that it felt like rush hour. So I was filling out the form for food stamps. And I thought, oh, it's because there's so many people that are probably applying for this, because the form crashed on me multiple times. But it happened like four times right in a row. So when I went back in to, you know, restart the form, I'd have to retype everything out again. So you have to tell them, do you have any cash in the house? Do you have money in like savings accounts? Do you have savings bonds? Do you have, basically, do you have anything of value that you could sell for money? And then having to repeat that information multiple times is really annoying. And I was like, this is weird. And it keeps failing at the same point. And I finally was like, I'm going to do it on my phone and turn off the Wi-Fi. And it went through like no problem. A lot of this year, I have felt on and off quite hopeless. Like, what's the point? Like, I was on a sequestered jury. Then I lost my job. Then my best friend died. Then I turned 40. And, you know, so much craziness happened. And I was wondering if it was really worth it. And then police officer killed George Floyd. And I was like, nothing that I've been through matters. Whatever problems I have with my internet or my finances or anything like that pales in comparison. Because we don't get to choose the time that we're alive in, right? And I think it's good to be alive right now. And I think it's good to speak out and to make our voices known and to seize whatever opportunity we can.
That's Jennifer Bridgens. She lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And you can see a picture of her and her workspace and her cats at marketplace.org/internet. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.